morning. My name is Michael McCusker. One April night, nearly 2 2/3 centuries ago, the First Amendment took to horse and rode through the darkened land, shouting the birth of independence, liberty, and justice for all. On another April day, 3 2/3 decades ago, the Bill of Rights shouted through a microphone the birth of Free Radio Columbia Pacific as the mouth of the Columbia River. KMUN 91.9 FM, the only public radio station on the North Oregon and South Washington coasts, celebrates its 37th birthday tomorrow, April 17th, this 2020 year of the third millennium. Harriet Baskus, KMUN's first station manager, said, KMUN as a community radio station in the Pacific Northwest shares with community radio stations worldwide the themes of democratization of communication, of as wide a community participation as possible, and of creating an accessible forum for the exchange of cultural and political ideas. KMUN is a gift, a jewel, a miracle, an early listener exclaimed. Broadcast from the Tillicum House near the Astoria Riverfront, KMUN reaches north into Washington and south and east along the Oregon coast and into the coastal mountains. KMUN operates through a subscription economy and is plugged into the world via satellite programming. Public community radio is expensive and controversial and is not paid for by the usual advertisements for the banal and botulistic. KMUN depends primarily upon revenues provided by listeners and functions as a nonprofit entity. KMUN offers just about everything a radio station can attempt to do and operates daily on the cultural edge where mega media fears to follow. It broadcasts an eclectic smorgasbord of imaginative, provocative, exotic, and occasionally dreadful programming. It is seldom bland or boring. KMUN, like most public or eccentric radio stations, is at the far left of the FM dial. The left side of the dial has for years been casual, even libertine, similar to the early years of computer internets when they were wild and free before commercial competition began coveting the wide open cyberspaces. As everyone who listens to KMUN is obviously aware, free speech is expensive. It has an underlying cost, and everyone who appreciates community public radio is aware what is necessary to keep programming independent, free, and open, even and especially during this shut-in pandemic, which means listeners are also stakeholders and paradoxically pay for broadcast independence to ensure that a little David of community radio like KMUN remains alive and vital amidst a cacophony of corporate radio Goliaths that are generally merciless in their shameless ambitions of radio dial dominance for the single-minded worship of the god Moolah, which of course includes trampling on free speech and its concomitant attributes of debate and controversy. The battleground is nothing less than worldwide domination of infotainment fought over by huge, ambitious commercial media cartels. Profits promise to be as astronomical as the competition for the money is fierce and merciless. No place for compassion or even sensibility, only relentless combat in a corporate world war that will destroy the media village to rule it. KMUN is obviously small fry, a mouse underneath the feet of rampaging rhinoceri, yet the large consequence trickles down to the least considered. Masking blatant greed with hypocritical ideological rubric, commercial media moguls attack public radio and television as liberal, socialist, and elitist, a rather insoluble mix. If it were up to the Federal Communications Commission, Paul Harvey and Mantovani would be the standards of radio broadcasting. Sex and shock radio in particular convulse the FCC into apocalyptic frenzy, and the commission is not especially fond of the First Amendment, regarding it as too liberal and libertine. It is unfortunate that many people agree with the FCC. They seem to feel that there is already too much liberty in America Incorporated, that it disrupts the sacred American dream of everlasting purchasing power and blessed consumption, and that it espouses bizarre ideas and equally esoteric lifestyles that threaten to bewitch, bother, and bewilder them. Commercial radio is, of course, no problem. It does not wish to disturb or offend anybody, but instead projects a boundless land of Oz and Harriet, easily attained with master charge. A few chilling commercials exemplify the dismal wasteland on the AM and upper end of the FM dial, advertising motels in which no one is surprised, or radio stations that say the same thing about their programming. Nothing new, imaginative, or provocative, just the same old twaddle about adolescent love and tears and car crashes to ensure perpetual cranial remission and pimply midlife orgasms. Rather than hands-on radio, the commercial stations reduce their listeners to consumers and treat them as empty-headed children amuck in toy stores. Controversy, original ideas, and experimental broadcasting are anathema to commercial radio, which depends instead upon innocuous pablum focused on the primordial mental range to hype the unnecessary and the indigestible. The endless saturation of high-pitched patter put out by commercial media sugarcoats the brain. The inane music and schlock squeezed grudgingly in between insipid commercials is hardly memorable enough to interfere with the dense airwave of consumer capitalism. The pervasive influence of advertising is much greater than the more ballyhooed TV violence or shock radio. Listeners and viewers are prodded several times an hour to purchase and consume a bewildering variety of products that purport to satisfy every craving or longing, every passion and desire. Advertising blends into a general perception of life, no longer separate pitches to purchase individual products, but instead a miasmal cultural warp, an unconscious assumption of life as advertised, overtakes the sense of life as it really is, attempting to mold and define whoever is within range of its brain-dead contagion. Commercial media is allied with the political and religious right in its wish to pamper the American brain as a willful child and desynaptize its thought weaves while cleansing it of reason and maturity. Public and listener-sponsored media such as KMUN intend the opposite, devoted to stretching and amplifying the American brain. This is anathema to commercial media, whose only purpose is to sell products. Corporate capitalism in league with political and religious ultra-conservatism shuns diversity, though the contradiction between sensual materialism and ecumenical tyranny might ultimately be disharmonious to the alliance. Public broadcasting does not intend to remanufacture its listeners and viewers. Cradle-to-grave consumerism is neither its means nor its ends. Instead, its attempts to counter the trend of perpetual adolescence with appeals to thought and intellect are serious and varied and shaped to adult responsibility in an increasingly complex and corrupt democracy. American society undervalues endeavors that do not seek profit. The bottom line of America is the bottom line. From childhood, most Americans are taught that money and its purchase power are society's vitality and the only true pursuit of happiness. Yet there are among the busy, self-interested population many who wish for generous community interaction and equity rather than couch potato apathy and home shopping. Their voices seem lost on the floor of the national stock market and are at present shoved aside. KMUN reflects a few of those voices. A small radio station at the bottom of the FM dial in a far-off corner of the nation. But it is here, on the air, where incredible varieties of ideas incubate and are sounded. Big money radio broadcasts for big bucks. Public radio scrounges for loose change to stay on the air. Community radio stations like KMUN are always looking for a dollar so they can broadcast. It is a listener-sponsored station that depends on its funding primarily from listeners, which is why its listeners are subjected a couple of times a year to promotions, pitches, pleas, and whines for new and old members to pledge cash. Also puts on fundraising benefits with local and traveling musicians and performers, and for many years sponsored a famous auction. The line of communication is tenuous and expensive. Listeners argue about the cost and value of satellite menus as well as the local venue, but that is what community radio is all about, undaunted by mega media and the self-interested cynicism that underlies our bottom line society. Think universally, act locally. A majority begins with one. What a person does, reads, listens to, and thinks about form the character and ideas necessary, not only for a personally gratifying life, but one that assists in alleviating the poverty or oppression of other lives. Perhaps that is too heavy a burden and too extravagant a promise to place upon a radio station like KMUN. Yet it is a voice that not only attempts to reflect a community, but also to inform it, to present ideas, thoughts, and opinions that commercial media finds unprofitable and thus shuns as if they were diseases. Ironically, despite outrageous claims by corporate mega media that it alone represents democracy and the First Amendment, a small public radio station like KMUN depends upon true democracy to survive, and it does survive because ordinary citizens keep it alive. Radio waves beam out beyond Earth into galactic space. Humanity's reputation might well rest on which signal reaches other sentient life first. Rush Limbaugh, Donald Trump, and Fox Network, or KMUN, gutsy and freewheeling, radio-free Columbia Pacific. And that was KMUNity Radio, the mouth of the Columbia, which I am responsible for because I wrote it. And now, a KMUNity radio portrait by Carol Newman, which she wrote for KMUN's 20th birthday in 2003. With the quote, "Commercial radio kills me, but KMUN 91.9 really thrills me." And that's an original song by Food Stamp Riot, Liam Dunn et al. In 1983, on the original day of broadcast, April 17th, 1983. A radio station? Really, Becky? An East Indian potluck and folk dance and a $10 membership, though I wondered if it would really happen? It did. It does. And I can't imagine life without it. So here's an abstract portrait of KMUN by a non-painter. Long, steep stairs in a dark stairwell and a small, intimate studio. Harriet with a flask of brandy in the bottom drawer for Novu programmers, she said. Doug at her right hand and left, and soon when the time was right, out in front. The grandiose bar at the brass rail and a motley crew talking, laughing, drinking, making alliances. Erica reading to us four mornings each week, then Nancy and a latte, taking turns, and Sylvia creating a whole dust jacket, not to mention late-night stories, Alden reading letters from home, and most of us believing they were, and Joseph transporting us with his travel journals, Doug's low-down dirty dog following the drinking gourd, what is folk music, Ed David and Lydia Mendoza, the Weavers and Kingston Trio, Broadway and opera perhaps better defined, and how we loved or hated those long silences. Afternoon jazz with Wild Vern and a slow-blooming KMUN friendship. I'd never cared for jazz before. Later, Obie and Vern bantering and playing the muse, and still later, the blues. Looking forward to each Barbara Grant gift, every drawing bringing warm delight. Tertu and George Humasti's half hour entirely in Finnish. Closing my eyes, I absorb another world. Tom Pye and albums aside, and the day Ed lifted the needle in mid-song because he didn't like the record. Trudy on the phones, in the books, on the air. Sister Pat's Historical Highlights, Elaine Meyer's Unconditional Love with Slugs, The Oyster Lady and the Garlic Man, Ruby, The Galactic Gumshoe, Egil Unander's Tall Tales, Dario Charnay, J. Pierce Christie in A Classical Tux, Mr. and Mrs. Swing's Repartee, The Eiffel Hour, Classical Mornings with the Stars, Live Music with the Locals, Women's Music with Reverend Sue, The Evolution of Skinamarink, Thank God It's Friday Folk Show, How Our Music Library Grew and Grew and Grows, Tux, Tails, Tennies, and A New Dress Under $5, All the Beautiful People, Exotic Food, Music, Art, and Everything I Always Needed or Didn't at the KMUN Electric Radio Auction, the party of the year, year after year after year. The inside stories learned long before mainstream media admitted them. Watergate, James Agee, Contragate, Ben Linder, mining of Nicaraguan harbors, Cornel West, Winona LaDuke, Howard Zinn, and so much more, only on KMUN. Deanne Bruner giving up nuclear issues when Reagan was reelected, and a lot of us wishing it had been the other way around. Chuck giving voice, and Max C keeping the flame alive. KMUN Children's Festival at the old fairgrounds in town. Clowns, face painting, a fire truck, Mr. Science, music, folk dancing, fortune telling, although it was banned. Community booths, cookie making, animals, a noisy day of laughter and joy for all ages. KMUN at the local Dixieland Jazz Jubilee. A remote at the Elks, broadcasting music, interviewing musicians, even dancing with a parasol parader. Fisher Poets Gathering, much later and still today. And then our motley crew in the streets of the Regatta Parade, young and not so, walking along with radios on our shoulders, blasting KMUN to the world with programmers hanging out the windows of the Gunderson Building, cheering us on. The Chicago bluesmen Rick brought to KMUN studio for a live interview, followed by a barbecue. They worried we would serve granola, were pleased we didn't, and pleased to hear Kid playing his blues. And years later in the Tillicum House, and a good thing too, the Tibetan monks giving us live music and an interview, the horn at the mic, and the monk in the hallway. Phone calls from folks for whom KMUN is a lifeline and a comfort, as it is often for me. Celebrations and then radio goodbyes to friends who gave so much. Bob, Ted, Ed, Elliot, Jamie, Rick, Obi, Michael. I was 3,000 miles away when KMUN first broadcast. When I returned home and turned on the radio, I laughed with joy to hear the voices of friends. Absolute magic. It still is today, bringing people together, making community from the very beginning and staying relevant. The KMUN family is vast and rich and so very fortunate to be. My greatest and deepest gratitude to everyone who's made and keeps making it happen. And that was by Carol Newman. Community Radio Portrait. K-munity Radio Portrait, which she wrote for the station's 20th anniversary. And Earth Day's 50th anniversary is April 22nd, and its celebration will be at home this year. Astoria's prodigy poet, Margaret Leah Bowler, was 11 when she wrote her tribute to Earth Day in 2001, its 31st annual observance. Earth's Checklist, an Earth Day poem. Say what you think what you say, for what would Mother Nature do if she saw her earth this way? If she saw all the pollution, all the smog, all the waste, all the careless forest fires, all the killings just from taste, all the rainforest destruction, the acid pouring from the sky, the shooting, the logging, killing species by and by. All the deadly fertilizer being sprayed upon the ground, the oil clogging up the beaches, yet the world is going round. What would Mother Nature do? What would Mother Nature do? First, she would put a stop to the pollution, clear the acid from the sky, prevent the careless forest fires, save each species by and by. stop the rainforest destruction and the smog and the waste, halt the shooting and most logging and the killings just from taste, ban the deadly fertilizer, start to clean up the ground, make our home a better place the whole world round. But Mother Nature softly speaks. Her voice is hard to hear. Yet when she is listened to, she can be heard from far and near. And listen to her closely, for we've got some things to do. Come on, come here, and pull up a seat, for you can help on Earth Day too. Come, go get a move on. Stop the pollution and the waste. After all, we are the future. Make our Earth a better place. Happy Earth Day, everyone. And that was Margaret Leah Bowler, Earth's Checklist. And now, a poem by Carolyn Dunn, The Mouth of the Columbia River. Sandbarred flat of deadly water from which fish flee, dumped on by the myopic breed dug in at your shores, your banks and bars, the cupboard of poisons, your water unsafe for any living use, your hills shorn, the sky's reflection, your brave beauty. We talk endlessly about the way you have been made a little useless to us, as if we had nothing to do with it, as if ruination stuck to us alone. Go on without us as you will, our effervescence, like the many little rainbows which decorate you, is what we are, and time will be your recourse and your benediction. Ernie Pyle, the greatest war correspondent since the ancient Greek Xenophon, was shot and killed by a Japanese machine gunner on a little island just off the coast of Okinawa 75 years ago on April 18, 1945. Among his belongings was a handwritten draft of a newspaper column he had written about the end of World War II in Europe a couple of weeks before the formal surrender of Nazi Germany. In the joyousness of high spirits, it is easy for us to forget the dead, Pyle wrote. There are so many of the living who have burned into their brains forever the unnatural sight of cold dead men scattered over the hillsides and in the ditches along the high rows of hedge throughout the world. Dead men by mass production in one country after another, month after month, year after year. Dead men in winter and dead men in summer. Dead men in such familiar promiscuity that they become monotonous. Dead men in such monstrous infinity that you come almost to hate them. Those are the things that you at home need to even try to understand. To you at home, they are columns of figures, or he is a near one who went away and just didn't come back. You didn't see him lying so grotesque and tasty beside the gravel road in France. We saw him by the multiple thousands. That's the difference. Ernie Pyle was killed on the tiny island of Iwo Jima. He was a small, frail man with a long, thin head, and he was always terrified. Somehow he found it in himself to go where the soldiers went. He had been loved by the soldiers because he wrote about them from their vantage, taking their risks and suffering their discomforts. No war reporter had ever been as close to or written so plaintively eloquent of the common soldier who bears the weight of all wars. The soldiers he was with when he was killed erected a hand-lettered sign, now replaced on the same spot by a stone monument, and the words are the same. At this spot, the 77th Infantry Division lost a buddy, Ernie Pyle, 18 April, 1945. This is Michael McCusker. 2 days and 155 years ago, on April 14, 1865, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, just 6 days after the Civil War ended. He is often mythologized as the war's last casualty. Frederick Douglass, the great black emancipator, a former slave, said of the martyred president, "Infinite wisdom has seldom sent any man into the world better fitted for his mission than Abraham Lincoln." Speculating on that assertion, what might be the outcomes of both the Civil War and the current pandemic if Presidents Lincoln and Donald Trump were transposed. Look out your windows late Saturday night or early Sunday morning just after midnight, and you might see a spectral horseman riding past and shouting, "The plague is coming." Happy birthday, KMUN.
Since last I see thee.